Welcome. And I'm glad that people are sitting on the floor, not because you're sitting on the floor, but because of the interest in the room. I think that's awesome. I want to say that I have a disclosure statement. I have no disclosures to report. My funding does not create a conflict of interest. And what I'm here today to talk about is East Stroudsburg University's experience of going from partially met to met. And this is the 2006 criteria. It changed in 2011. It's very similar to the narrative that you see up here, but it changed slightly. And just be forewarned that in 2015, the accreditation criteria, my understanding, is it's going to change dramatically. And it's going to really bring everybody back to the drawing board in terms of how we're going to meet CEEF accreditation. And our organization, the Association of Accredited Public Health Programs, can be helpful in assisting accredited programs as well as those seeking accreditation about how to be successful in that process. So for those of you that have gone through this, you sit down with the site visitors at the end of the 2-day site visit event, and you hear for the very first time that criteria 2.7, and then they read the criteria, and then they say this criteria is met, and you're relieved. This criteria is met with commentary, which actually may be your opportunity to get your administrators at the school to buy into some of the changes that you need. You can actually stage that a bit in terms of asking them to put that in their commentary. Or you get what we received, which was this criteria is partially met, which sort of makes your shoulders slump. You know, you sort of want to just sort of hide somewhere. Especially with your dean and your provost sitting in the room listening to this. And the feedback that we received in terms of this criteria being partially met, we lacked a competency-based assessment of student learning. We had supervisor evaluations where the actual student, the internship evaluation process is one that consists of students evaluating the internship site, but then the site supervisor providing a midterm and a final evaluation and in terms of their performance within the internship. We had a comprehensive oral examination, which actually consists of about 15 different questions that we could ask those students, most of which are anchored in the public health core, but we didn't provide sufficient evidence that the program competencies were being evaluated through our culminating experiences. We didn't have an evaluation rubric. Department of Education is providing a lot of counsel to CEEF in terms of how to go about doing accreditation. And evaluation rubrics years back were not critical, but they have become very critical. So we didn't have an evaluation rubric to assess the attainment of our program competencies, nor did we ask our students to assess their own perceived attainment of the competencies. And then we lacked evidence of an employer survey to ascertain perceptions of graduates' acquisition of our program competencies. So, how many of you have gone through the accreditation process? Show of hands again. Keep them up. Bring them forward. If they're a little bit of shaking, that's, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder that I'm triggering for you. Could be Starbucks this morning, but post-traumatic stress disorder. And I have an 800 hotline for you with me, so the phone's right there. So so if you need to make the phone call, I have... Oh, here. 1-800-PART-MET. I got it on the speed dial. And for those of you who've gone through the process, It's a trying situation because you're sitting back. It's a very exhausting couple days that you go through in terms of the site visit, not to mention all of what you need to do in terms of prepping for the site visit. So one of the things that happened with our employee survey, we had competencies similar to Gary. I saw Gary Gilmore's here earlier, very similar to his program. Our program competencies were similar to those that have been developed by NCHEC, and our competencies were adapted by the Council of Linkages. And when we began doing our self-study and knew that we had to get that employer survey together, we started making phone calls to our employers. And with the Affordable Care Act, the whole shifting of how our alumni were being employed and where they were going in terms of employment changed dramatically. And so as we were asking those questions about whether or not our alumni were meeting our program competencies, most of it did not apply. And so we sort of dropped that. We knew going into the site visit that we were going to get dinged on criteria 2.7. So what we did was is we went back to the drawing board, and we had 30-plus competencies going into the site visit, but with our partially met, and we had to go back and provide an interim report that, you know, is also similar to Leah's program due in June. And we went back, and some of the feedback that I was receiving from member programs or of our association was, you know, more competencies is not better than fewer. And CEF also is saying, you don't need 30-some-odd-plus competencies. How are your students going to acquire all those competencies? So we drilled it down to 10. And I'm not sure 10 is the right number either, but that's what we worked with, was 10. So we came. So our program faculty came up with 10 competencies, one on the bio. Oh, and before you decide what your competencies are going to be, I think it's really critical. You know, Leah talked about having retreats where the faculty get away from campus and be able to plan, to really think about the branding of your MPH program. What is it that your alumni are leaving with that makes them unique, different than your competing programs in the region? And the branding of our program, I said, you know, what our students and the feedback that we're getting from folks out in the real world is that they have really strong analytic skills, they know how to do program evaluation, they know how to do outcomes research, and with the Affordable Care Act and evidence-based medicine that was out there, that's where the students were landing their positions, and mostly around population-based approaches. So that's really what we were good at doing. So then why not make sure that our competencies are measuring those criteria? So we have the biostats, epidemiology, biostats, health policy and administration, a couple competencies in health policy and administration. And then because we are a degree in community health education, soon to be a degree in population based approaches, we wanted to sort of build that into our competencies too. So we had health behavior change, environmental health, mostly around like the built environment as opposed to vector control and so on. These are some of our other competencies. Some of these are then overarching that across multiple courses. Communication skills. We felt 9 was something that we were very good at in terms of our training. We have a class in cultural competencies. And then leadership and systems thinking. Boy, you would think that for the decades that we've had systems thinking out there, that we still lack that. We still have health systems and organizations that function within silos and don't see how the work that they're doing is complementary to other organizations. So our strategy, so those were our competencies, and then our strategies to move from partially met to met. We developed, you know, our platform for online distance ed is D2L. But what we did was we developed an online portfolio development. It's essentially not a class. It's just all of our students sign up for the portfolio development site. And one of the very first things that I have them do is, okay, portfolio development site, you get registered to that, and then I want you to post your resume on the portfolio site, and I'll provide you feedback on your resume, from anything from the format of how that resume is written, if during undergrad they were a bartender and that's how they paid their bills. You know, it's like my counsel back to them is, we need to remove the bartender from your resume. Well, then it looks like I don't have any work. That's right, you don't. You don't have any work. But what we're going to do is we're going to coach you to get volunteer work, to really build that resume as we go. Because the philosophy we have in our program, and I say this right at the start of the program, the challenge of our faculty is to launch your career. Your challenge is to make it a career worth launching. And that by the time we reach the finish line, we hope to then move you out into the public health workforce and be successful. So on those competencies, we have at the very beginning of the program, they complete those competencies using a 3-point ordinal scale from lacking competence to competent to it being a strength. And so they are then to circle, and it's based on their coursework, based on their internship and field work experiences, field work being practicum or other things that they're doing volunteering prior to the internship. We have a publishable quality paper requirement, and then we have a service learning organization called CHO, Community Health Organization, which we have students writing intramural grants to provide public health interventions on campus, from hand washing to water conservation to recycling, you know, social marketing recycling campaigns. And then we have this overall assessment, which is essentially their final not competent, competent, or it's a strength for me across our 10 different competencies. We have them do this at the very beginning. And what's interesting with regard to how our ratings come in with this is that we have a little bit higher standard deviation with our competency ratings at the beginning, because some of the students come in thinking they know what they know, and so they think they're really good at all this. And so and then we have them take it at the completion of year one coursework. So like we have the biostats course in year one, so the biostats competency, you start to see a jump in their self ratings. For the internship, if they're in year one, they'd leave that blank. Publishable paper, they're leaving that blank. And then, again, we follow this through. Completion of all coursework at the end of year two, they take this self-assessment once again. And then the completion of the program, which is the coursework, the internship, the publishable paper, and the oral exam. Now, through this entire process where their self-assessments are conducted, they are on D2L. And what my role is to provide formative feedback to them in terms of what they need to improve so that they can reach the finish line in terms of being a strength for all the competencies within our program. So our strategy to move from partially met to met, we have a parallel form of that same assessment that is completed by our internship site supervisors and by our initial employers less than 3 years post-graduation. And I think that's critical. This is essentially a way of validating the self-assessments. My concern was sometimes students, well, I really enjoyed the faculty, I really enjoyed the program, I learned quite a bit, I'm just going to circle a bunch of strengths here on all of these competencies that are in the program, and then how do you know that those self-assessments are indeed an accurate measure of whether or not we're achieving our competencies? So what I've done is I've collected data. It's a parallel form. instead of, you know, I have reached these competencies, it's the student at hand has, you know, that they're evaluating has reached those competencies. So here's, I know this is a real busy slide, but here the green is the first year. When we started this, we started it right after, you know, we received our partially met. So I measured first year and our second year and our third, the graduating MPH. Now, this is a cross-sectional design initially because I didn't have the longitudinal data. I just wanted to be able to see whether or not our first years were different in our second years versus our graduating students in terms of self-assessments of the competencies. And so we have an N of 15, an N of 16, an N of 14. We have a response rate of 70%. And so what I did was just a straight-up ANOVA to measure whether or not there's a significant difference in the mean, rate self-ratings of the competencies. So the general trend that you see here is you see a movement towards greater competency. Two is competent. Three is a strength. So what this does is it also provides us feedback in terms of back to our faculty in terms of what we're doing well. Health behavior change skills, we're doing very well. Health communication, overarching cultural competency, we're doing really well. And, you know, this competency 7, I have to go back, I don't have these memorized, but this is one of the weaker ones, but we're still above the cutoff of what we're considering. The cutoff is being a 2.0, which means that they're competent. And this one will wake you up. It inverted on me when I entered this most recently. This is actually a within subjects design. This is a looking at before they started the program, first year and then second year. So what I've been able to do in the last couple of years since our self-study is now actually do a time series analysis or sequential self-assessments and be able to pair these up, if you will, to look at how the students are progressing through the program in terms of their self-assessments. And what warms my heart, if our branding of our program is the analytic skills, I'm feeling really good about this right here. Always feeling good about our cultural competency. And why it peaks out is because they receive most of what we train in cultural competency in the second year. So this here, again, is a time. So this is the sequential data that we have. And then to validate whether or not our students are reaching their competencies, or whether the program's reaching competencies, what I did then was I did composite scores on our overall student assessments, and these were with our students that have recently graduated, and then our employer assessments of our alumni. So I have a response rate of 77%. But, you know, and this is actually when you conduct this portion of the evaluation of your program, it's, you know, there's a hesitation before you hit the okay on the SBSS because you're, here we go, let's see whether or not there's any validation here, because it's almost like maybe you don't want to know what the answer is. But I keep reminding myself that ostriches are not high on the phylogenetic scale and that we need to know. So, and we see some very similar, the correlation between our self-assessment data and the parallel form for our employer data is 0.77, the Spearman-Rowe correlation, 0.77 on the ordinal scale. And then I also conducted this was not sequential, so just really an independent samples t-test on the means of these on the scale. And found no significant difference in any of the competencies, which is what you want to see, which means that there's just a level of agreement that is there. One minute. Okay, reflecting on this approach, so we're seeing significant improvements in the attainments of our program competencies. What we're finding out from our self-assessments and from our internship site supervisor assessment, employer assessments, what we're finding out is those that are self-reporting higher attainment of the self-competencies had much more involvement in our service learning club or experiential learning. And I think that in training practitioners, and that's what we do, the more that we can get our students out of the classroom and into settings where the classroom is held on site at a healthcare system or a community-based agency to talk about evaluation, and then to hear from the staff in terms of what evaluation they're doing, I think that that is incredibly valuable, and I think that students feel that they're really learning a lot more. Now, is that so? Is it the service learning experience that's improving our competencies? Or maybe it's the type of student who gets involved with service learning experiences. The next steps for us is our next three courses, three of our courses, a foundations course, program evaluation, and public health practice skills. We'll have about 33% of the scheduled classes held on-site at healthcare systems, community-based organizations, and city, county health departments. And we also see this, by the way, as a way of accomplishing another criteria, which is workforce development, because the staff will be sitting in our classes. Okay? Thank you.